Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the calling.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's our special treat to have 2 days in a row the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains on Twitter, and the vice president of grains at Citizen Elevator. Well, I could say what's up, but I talked to you yesterday, so what's going on?
Oh, not much. Just recovering from the blizzard and the sick kid and all that fun stuff. So just working on not falling ill myself. So
yeah.
He ended up with the flu this weekend. So we're working on that, but how that goes.
Did you get your flu shot?
No, which I'm regretting, obviously. Now, they asked me if I wanted it. I'm like, no, we don't go too many places. And then when they told us he was positive Friday night, I was like, oh,
I wish I had gotten it. Well, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, yesterday we were talking about, you know, what's going on in the grains and the planting and all that stuff. So, you know, as your people start getting ready with their marketing plans, now what are you looking for as the trader side of the equation? You know, getting ready to get to help them out and tell them what to do.
Yeah, from my standpoint, what I'm working on doing.
Yeah, in other words, you're
for my customers.
You're making plans to get them ready. So, what are you doing on your side of the equation to make sure that they've got everything ready and everything's in place?
Yeah, well, I'm just trying. I mean, my biggest thing right now is working on basis. You know, the difference between the cash price and futures. So, and we're talking about new crop, and guys are working on making plans for new crop and stuff like that, but. We also have a boatload of old crop corn to deal with, or corn, beans, and in some cases wheat. So I'm working on just trying to figure out what that market looks like for the next 6 months, basically trying to figure out what I'm going to do with the stuff that we just harvested that's sitting in the elevator and how I'm going to maximize my profit there. So it's a little bit of both. I've got a lot of customers now that, you know, we're beyond the quarterly stocks and crop production and all that report there January 12th, and the market really hasn't done much since. So now it's guys calling and wanting to talk about what their marketing plan should be for the old crop, kind of how to turn bushels into cash and stuff like that. So that's a lot of my focus right now is working on putting target orders in. So I have open orders standing at the market rallies for on the future side for customers when we do get that rally. You know, we've got that in place, and I have to work on organizing that sort of set of information, and then working on what we're going to do with the old crop stuff is kind of takes up most of my time there.
So what is the difference? Tell me the difference between what new crop and old crop.
Yeah, it's just the marketing year is September 1st. So when I say new crop, I mean anything that's going to be planted this spring, and then old crop, anything that's currently in the bin.
But it really doesn't.
It could be crop from 2016, 15, 14. It doesn't really matter. It's just all old.
Right. Once they're in the bins, they're in the bins. It doesn't matter anymore, right?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So and then new crop is the stuff that they're working on growing, or that they will work on growing, the stuff they're going to plant this spring.
Now, do farmers, once you throw it in the bin, now do they just consider that, are they considering the old basis, or do they just mix it up and just try to maximize the best they can get from what they have?
They just try to mix it up and maximize the best that they can get from what they have. I mean, there's some guys that have stuff sold. We have futures in place, and we work with those hedges accordingly. You know, those are the guys that are a little bit more fortunate than the ones that are trying to figure out what to do with 352 March futures and stuff like that. But for the most part, they try to maximize. I mean, that's the point of having a bin is maximizing, you know, the carry aspects plus the basis improvement and selling when it's the most opportune time. But most guys, I would say, actually use their bin to wait, you know, until they have to absolutely move it to turn it into cash sort of deal. And that's somewhat frustrating because I like to try to get folks looking at their cash flow needs a year out. So like right now, if you know, and typically that's the interesting thing about farming is typically the same amount of money or close to the same amount of money is due, you know, around the same time every year. So rent's due on January 15th and the John Deere payments due on February 1st and property taxes are due February 15th or something like that. So I like to tell a lot of my customers, okay, you know, you need X amount of dollars next January. Let's put plans in place in order to have that kind of cash flow coming your way. However, that doesn't happen as often as I'd like to see it happen. So most of the time I'll get a phone call, you know, on a Monday with a customer telling me he needs, you know, $100,000 cash by Friday or something like that. And then we just have to move the grain accordingly and figure out how to get their bills paid.
And that's typically that does create some action everywhere because that's, you know, if there's enough of them, that does create a little bit of a some selling pressure, which is another problem that guys who don't hedge don't realize that they're creating some of their own problems just for those reasons, right?
Yeah. I mean, we saw that big time last August, September timeframe, you know, where everyone knew that they were going to have to harvest the next crop in line. So they were selling what was left over, you know, since the market never really rallied. And we saw significant downside pressure because of the fact that folks were selling this old crop corn that they had to just kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, we call it, you know, puking it, where it's just like, bleh, get rid of it. You know, I've held on to it for so long and obviously there's nothing I can do with it now. So let's just get it sold. So they do. It creates their, you know, it creates their own problem, so to speak, in the sense that they're, you know, they're selling the board. You know, they're generating cash by selling the board, but they're still selling the board. So even if, you know, you speculative buyers have come in and are buying, you know, they're offset by farmer selling, which we saw that last year during the rally too. We had, you know, almost a near record speculative short and farmer selling, came in and basically, you know, we had a very minor rally, so to speak. The speculative short almost covered itself, you know, simply because the farmers were doing themselves, you know, they were competing against themselves, you could say, on the board side.
Right. And that is a problem when we see that happen. And that's that, by the way, the term puking is a very technical term. It's been around for a long time. So I don't want you to get, you know.
Yeah. You never want to offend anyone, but that's definitely exactly what it is.
Well, I mean, you know, traders get it when they get the tap on the shoulder and farmers get it when they get the tap on the shoulder from the bank usually is where it comes from. And not being prepared for that. And that's one of the things I think that most don't understand is you have to be prepared for the worst and have a little bit of that extra ready to go because you don't want to be able to have to force to sell out at usually the bottom because that's usually what's happening because everybody's got the same kind of idea, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's. I mean, you're competing against yourself. So I'll always say that to customers when we're at a marketing meeting. We talked about it, you know, this past weekend. I told the audience in the room, said, look to your left and look to your right. That's your competition. You know, and they look at you kind of weird because it's just another farmer. But that's exactly why your basis isn't going to rally. It's because, you know, your neighbor up the road has just as much corn as what you do. To sell and that's 100-fold. You know what I mean? We saw stock levels, you know, in the last report showed us with corn stocks, you know, equal to a year ago on farm and most states and in other states up, you know, 40, 50, 100 million bushel from the previous December. I mean, that's a huge amount of grain that has to be moved eventually. And so the worst thing in the world is to sit there and hold it, you know, and continue to hope and hope and hope because eventually when you have to puke and your neighbor has to puke, it makes it even worse because not only does the board
hold on,
start
we'll
to
talk
fall,
about
but...
we'll talk about puking when you come back. This is this is Angie Setcher, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizen Elevator. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz will be right back with more after the break. Well, Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, as well as at Goddess of Grains on Twitter. All right, so let's go back to the puking. So that's what happens is everybody's puking at the same time, and they've all got the same issue, which is what creates usually a market meltdown, and that's kind of what happens. Is that not the case?
Yeah, it's definitely the case. So that's the thing to keep in mind is, and I'm seeing it, it happens also. We saw it happen last year in soybeans, and I'm seeing that conversation kind of show up again this year. Now, soybeans have a much higher cost of carry because you can get so much more out of them from a cash flow perspective, and you know, money in hand is much better than money at the bank sort of deal. And so as a commercial, though, you know, with soybeans, you look at it, and when I say commercial, I mean an elevator, of course, but you look at it and you realize that there's carry in the market, some of the best carry that we've seen, you know, in several years. You know, we haven't had carry markets. In fact, most of the markets, you know, 2012, 13, 14 were inverted. So you didn't really get paid to hold the beans, of course, unless you were able to trade basis properly. Well, this year it's been a bit of a different story, and you've seen significant carry, and in fact, more carry in the beans than you've seen in corn and stuff like that. So I was talking to an end user last week, and they kept pushing the bid further and further. You know, just they needed to get beans bought, they needed backhaul, stuff like that, and they wanted to know what I would sell. And, you know, the problem for me is I'd already committed my beans, which they were somewhat surprised about, but I was given a really good basis opportunity last summer. And so I don't have much, you know, free stocks to sell at this point in time. And I said, what's the deal? Do people just not have beans or what? And he said that, you know, commercials actually had rolled a lot of their supply forward, or were planning on rolling it forward, because they wanted to capture the carry as well, which is funny because the carry on the board doesn't necessarily cover your actual cost of carry. But the anticipation is that once we get into summer, we'll actually have quite a bit of free stocks available, because commercials will be actually competing with farmers as well, because they saw the carry on the board, wanted to try to capture that. And, you know, there is an opportunity there that you could see basis erode all of that carry, just because everyone's trying to move beans and it just doesn't pay. So for me, I'm getting ahead of it, right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm going to go ahead and commit most of my beans, get the spot emptied out, and put the cash flow into the coffer there instead of sitting on them and seeing what happens. So it's definitely interesting, though, because everyone tends to lean in the same direction. And most of the time in this industry, you want to zig when everyone else is zagging.
Well, yeah, because you're tying up profits. What you're doing is you're locking up profits right away, and you're not going to tie them up and not going to be stuck with the old puke job. And that's something that we always have to worry about. Now, when you look at, you know, the overall process, and of course, a lot of products have now gone to, you know, not necessarily you have to take delivery. Now, what about like grains? You guys ever force delivery if you own a future? I think that
you can. It's in the contract that you can state that, you know, hey, you have to deliver this. It's you know, I'm not going to allow you to roll. I typically don't do it, but there are other end users that do, where they'll only allow one roll. Or something like that. So they don't want you kicking the can down the road indefinitely. Where for me, you know, I don't have a problem as long as my customers know what their risk is when it comes to spreads and things like that. So if you have an HTA or a futures position locked in, a future short, of course, if the market inverts and you want to try to roll it ahead, you're going to lose money on that, because you have to, buy it and buy the nearby and sell the deferred, and the loss in that inversion has to go to the farmer. But you know, most of the case for me, my farmers understand that risk and they're aware, and they'll deliver accordingly as needed. But we have seen it in the past where big companies have come out and forced delivery, you know, at a time when farmers may not have it, or forced a roll at a time when it's not advantageous for the farmer. So, but it is, you know, in the contract, it states that you have to deliver, you know, when the buyer dictates delivery time frame, and so there are some folks out there that take that seriously, where for me, I haven't. I mean, it's been tempting sometimes if you have a basis position on, you have a short and you're short overall cash, but you know, once you do that to a customer, usually you won't hear from them again for good reason.
They're not a customer anymore. What do you think about a lot of the futures have gone to, as they say, cash settlements versus, you know, real delivery settlements now? Does that does that do anything to you? Does that affect your business at all, or does that concern you at all, or is that advantageous or a disadvantage to you?
No, it doesn't really concern me too much. I mean, I'll flat out tell you straight. You know, we've been delivered on. We've had wheat positions on. You know, maybe a long position going into delivery, and I anticipated the spread to come in, and so I didn't want to roll it at a 24-cent carry or something, and I get a phone call that, you know, congratulations, it's a bushel of wheat, 5,000 or, you know, 25,000 or 50,000 or whatever to be exact. And, you know, we redeliver, so it's convenient for me in the sense that, you don't have to figure out how to physically take delivery. It's a cash transaction overnight or whatever, and you have to pay the cost of interest and stuff and redeliver. And sometimes you make money on it, sometimes you don't. There's a certain elevator company in the industry that's really, really good at taking advantage of the delivery market. And of course, that doesn't mean the physical commodity necessarily trades hands. It's just more so of a paper transaction that one, you have a winner and a loser, just like in anything else. So overall, it doesn't bother me, too awful much. And we do a lot of handling of grain that we never touch, too. So like one third of my business is stuff that farmers deliver in at harvest time. Two thirds of my business is stuff that farmers, I put on HTAs, hedge to arrives, which is a futures only position for the customer. And then we work on maximizing the spread money that we can gain and basis improvement that we can gain. And then they deliver into an end user through my name. And so, two thirds of our business, in fact, is someone called it, gosh, I wish I could remember. It was really funny. It was actually kind of a derogatory term where it was like, we weren't really trading the grain. We were just passing it off. And I was like, we do that all the time. There's nothing. Lots of people do that. That's, you're seeing with that 199A co-op discussion right now, ways that people can trade grain without actually touching it. And that's just all part of the gig.
So, I mean, again, it's a business that takes a lot to it. And I think that, many people don't understand, even the people that are in it don't always understand what they need to do to get the job done. What are your thoughts to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's legit. I think a lot of people outside of the cash side of the business, too, don't understand all of the points of actual cash, physical bushel trading, all of the ins and outs of it. And then, of course, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of folks out there that automatically assume, just because you're taking cash, it's easy. Well, you buy low and you sell high, and stuff like that. And the reality is there's a lot that goes into it, and it's not always that easy. I wish it was, but it's not.
Oh, no, I mean, it's always, again, there's always issues that come in to any market. And, I think, one of the things that I want to, ask you about is, okay, so what does somebody do when they get in trouble and they can't get out? Then what happens?
You hope like hell you'll figure something out. So, I mean, I've had a couple different, I can tell you a couple different stories of poor trades. I had a young kid come to me the other day and he's like, my manager's going to kill me. I handled this wheat. I didn't realize the discount schedule that I was delivering into. We're getting discounted 25 cents a bushel on every truck, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, honey, yeah, this is going to suck. You're going to have a come to Jesus meeting and you're going to get yelled at, plain and simple. But next time you know that when you make a sale, you're going to be reevaluating or closely evaluating the discount schedule, specifically in trading wheat. I call it honor among thieves because there's always a way that someone's going to try to hose you, for lack of a better term there as well. I feel like I'm just puking and hosing today, but I've had a couple of different situations. One time I had committed, I sold 300,000 bushels.
Before I have you committed, hold that thought. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Right. This is the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horwich. We're with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains on Twitter. And of course, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And want to remind you to check out our highschoolinvesting.com website. And if you do, and you go to patreon.com/ Says Bubba Trading. You can make a small donation, and if you do that, we will give you a free week of our futures advisory service. So go check that out and help us out. We want to keep educating our youth so they don't have these problems of getting hosed and puked. And in the meantime, go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every single day and help us get to our goal of 1 million downloads a month. We'll be right back with more from Angie after the break. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains on Twitter, and also the vice president of grains at Sis's Elevator. All right, so we're going to have you committed, but tell us the committed story anyways.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's when you get into problems, you know, the last segment there, you'd ask, what happens when you get into a problem? How do you get out of it? Well, you pray that you're able to do so without losing too much money. And that's why that happened to me, is I had, turned around and I'd had bushels bought from a customer, about 150,000. And I had 150,000 in the elevator that I was looking to get rid of. And at the time, all of the conversation was that basis wasn't going to get any better. Basis was going to get worse throughout the summer. You know, everyone was on the same page, and that should have been a sign at that point. But I just started at Citizens, so I was just kind of in charge of taking care of things. And like I said, we had these customer bushels and we had elevator bushels. And, I thought we were perfectly comfortable in selling. I think I said 300,000. I think it ended up, it was closer to about 250,000, was what I had committed to the end user to sell. So time comes to start shipping, and I call the customer to let them know, you know, what value they have locked in, what they need to do to get it moved. And no one calls back, and no one calls back, no one calls back. And so we end up going out to the farm, one of my elevator managers and I, and knock on the side of the bins, completely empty. They'd already moved the corn that they had committed to us prior because the basis had improved. So in the meantime, I'm short this 150,000 bushel that I was supposed to have ownership of out of a farm. And like I said, the basis had improved at that point, you know, 15 to 20 cents from where I'd made the sale. So that's already a 15 to 20 cent loser. You know, just, it's the same thing as speculating on the market and, you know, you buy and it drops, and, or, you know, of course you sell and it goes higher. And that is what had happened. I got lucky though. I'd had a phone call and someone was looking to sell 150,000 bushel and I was able to get it bought and, get it delivered in at that point. And we took a 20 cent loss on that. You think to yourself, God, why did I do that? You know, I lost 20 cents a bushel on 150,000 bushel. You know, that really, really stinks. Well, the basis actually rallied another 70 cents from there. So had I not covered, you know, at a 20 cent hickey and thought, well, I'll just wait it out and see what happens, I'd actually lost about 90 cents. So, I mean, that's the thing. You have to make the decision. And that's why you're seeing the big groups out there, you know, ADM, Bungie, you know, talking about how hard it is to trade in this market setup. You know, it used to be that you could go out and say, well, that looks like a good basis. I'm going to go ahead and commit a big chunk of bushels to that, and I'll get them bought and basis a weekend, because I'll sell into this market structure and take away that end user's needs and everything will be hunky dory. I'll buy it cheaper later and make all the money. Well, you know, even in the face of big supplies, we've still seen overall basis structures stay quite hand to mouth. In fact, firming more often than not as we get closer to the period of delivery. So a lot of these places have made these commitments and then discovered later on that, poor trades, and they weren't able to get ownership from the farmer at those levels, and they had to pay up and stuff like that. So it's just been an interesting change in market structure. A lot of it coming from that ethanol, you know, the increase in ethanol demand and stuff like that. But yeah, you make a crap trade, you got to work your way out of it, and you're expected to deliver if you have bushels sold.
And welcome to the Bubba Show with hoses, pukes, and hickeys. Not what you're thinking, though. This is a G-rated show. Well, maybe a little.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, so when you're trading now, do you trade on your own as well? Do you trade a little bit for your own account? Do you do any of that?
No. I had a lot of people ask me, and then they tell me I can't say I'm a trader because I don't speculate. But the reality for me is for one, I think it's a little bit of a conflict of interest for me to be trying to trade futures, you know, for myself and stuff like that. Not saying that it is necessarily, but, you know, the biggest thing for me is my personality is one of a risk manager. So, of course, if I'm taking a speculative trade, you know, in futures alone, and I'm not really managing my risk at that point in time. So I always say that I would be a really crappy speculator because I'd make about a penny and be like, okay, I'm out, you know, but I do have friends, you know, that trade and will call me and say, hey, you know, what do you think I should do here? And even them, I hate giving advice. I can give a farmer advice all day long, but to someone who doesn't really have, you know, what you would call skin in the game, you know, i.e. a product to move along with it, I have such a hard time being like, well, you know, buy soybeans here or do something like this there. It's just, it's hard for me to,
well, that makes
to
sense.
Dive right in that way.
Well, that makes sense because you are, yeah, you're a risk manager versus a trader, and you're doing the same thing. But what, you know, I think one thing that people forget about is when you have a crop to protect, you know, we hedge crops, we hedge beef, we also hedge stock portfolios. And there's a big difference between the three. And the big difference is when you're hedging a stock portfolio, you're hedging an investment that you're looking to accumulate and you want to compound. When you're hedging what you own in the fields or when you own in the barn, you're trying to protect yourself from losing your butt. And that's the difference that people don't necessarily understand. So your mentality is, okay, this is, I've got this in my hand at a dollar, and I can lock in $1.30 today. I might as well take the $1.30, you know, at least on part of it. Yeah. Even if it goes to $1.80, I've locked it in. So now I don't have to worry about it going to 70. And I think that's where a lot of people get confused with what you do and what general speculation is in the whole markets. What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I've had a couple different conversations on Twitter, especially with traders, you know, speculators or people who have been on the floor at different, you know, trade entities and stuff like that. And you know, they're traders in their mind. You know, you watch Trading Places and it's not about a group of cash traders trying to figure out what basis and spreads are going to do over the next month. You know, and I had one guy one time say, cash trade is easy. It's so slow. I don't even know how anyone could have a hard time, you know, trading cash bushels. And I'm like, you're right, it is slow. It'll take you a good, you know, 12 months to realize you really screwed up. You know, if you aren't careful, I liken it to that scene in Austin Powers when they're coming at him on the steamroller and he's screaming and they're like, move. And they're moving in slow motion and he's still yelling, you know, and sometimes you can see it in the market structure that, you know, you're going to get run over by this steamroller and there's you know, not much to do. But then there's other times where it moves really quickly. You know, I had accumulated a long position of, and there wasn't only so much white wheat in the state, right? You know, it's a specialty crop. It's something that's a little bit more useful in food than red wheat and stuff like that. And so there's a limited supply, a finite supply of white wheat in the state. And I was accumulating it because the market structure at that point in time was offering me $3 a bushel over the board for this white wheat. And I'm accumulating it, you know, and kind of nickel and diming this buyer. You know, I want 310 over. I don't know. I was greedy. And, you know, this is another lesson of life there, you know, but 310 over. And he's like, I'll give you 290. You know, we're 20 cents off. And he turns around and in a day's time booked a train out of Idaho of white wheat, bought in all of his needs for the next 3 months. So he went from that 290 offer to out of the market. So I had accumulated a significant long at an exceptionally high price, and my one buyer that I was relying on to pay me, you know, $3.10 over was no longer in the market structure, you know. So So there's times when it's really slow. You accumulate a soybean position at harvest time, and you have the full year to decide how you want to manage the spread and the basis. And you can sell 50,000 here and 50,000 there, and life is great. And then there's other times where from Tuesday to Wednesday, you know, you lose $2 a bushel, you know, and so, yeah, in my world, you know, I like I said, I have enough other things to worry about. The last thing I want to do is try to spec which direction the futures are going to go. Although basis and spread trading that I do has a huge, is hugely impacted by futures. So if the futures market rallies, basis tends to weaken, spreads tend to tighten, you know, stuff like that. So I am in a certain way making bets on what futures are going to do, but I don't do it in my own personal account.
Well, right, you're speculating on what's going to happen, but you are using usually an underlying basis that you already own. So again, it makes all the sense in the world, and that's I think something that many don't understand about the general business and about what we're trying to do when you're again, because what I do on a day-to-day basis is not what I might tell somebody who's farming or producing it to do, right? I mean, I might, you know, I want everybody to be storing their grains right now. I mean, if you can, yeah. And I'm very clear about that you can only do so if you have the storage space you're not paying for it. If you're paying three or four or five or six or seven cents a month to store, you're killing yourself. You might as well just take the loss now, because many times in our business, the first loss is the best loss, right?
Oh, yeah. Make your first loss your biggest is what my boss always tells me. In fact, that was kind of the mantra he gave me with the corn deal that I was telling you about, where I took the 20-cent hickeys. He's like, get it done. Make your first loss your biggest. You know, you screwed up, learn from it, go forward kind of deal. And, you know, so that's always been kind of my line is you want to do that. Because very rarely when you have a loss, does it all of a sudden magically turn into a unicorn trade? You know what I mean?
Right.
The trend is your friend, and typically, if you know you're in the process of losing, you're going to continue to be in the process of losing unless you're, you know, something magical happens.
We'll talk about more of that when we come back from the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains and Chief Risk Arbor,
right?
Citizens Elevator. And, of course, she's also Goddess of Grains on Twitter. And she likes to talk about hoses, puking, and hickeys. So we'll be back with more from Angie after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day so we can reach our goal of 1 million downloads a month. That's what we're trying to do, and I need your help, so make sure you do that. And we'll be back with Angie after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back to you in two. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, as well as the Goddess of Grains on Twitter. Make sure you follow her. So we were talking about the first loss, the best loss, and all these other good things that go on. And, you know, I think one thing that we never learn, and it's hard to learn, is to just, you know, sometimes it's better just to be out and not involved, because we do become too emotional, don't we, involved in these markets?
Oh, yeah. No position is a position, right? No, you know, and not having anything in place is a position. And so there's times you'll see me tweeted on Twitter, too, you know, where I say, turn the screen off, walk away, because you know that the market move is going to be irrational for a short period of time, and that farmers are going to get really wrapped up in it and freak out and probably make a poor decision. And so there are times, I think it was after the March 31st report a year or two ago, where it was exceptionally bearish for corn, but, you know, compared to what expectations were. And so there's two different things to look at when new numbers come in. How does it rate versus expectations? What does it mean long term? And in that instance, you know, it was negative versus expectations and short term, you know, exceptionally, bearish to the market, which meant that, you know, you're going to be looking at a week or two of perhaps really strong downward trade. But the reality was, long-term wise, you still had weather to make it through. You still had, you know, bullish old crop information and stuff like that. So long-term, you knew it wasn't going to impact the market as much, you know, 3 months from now. And so there's times where I'll flat out say to my customers, walk away, you know, just turn the screen off, take your family on vacation, you know, do something that is different, than, you know, staring at the screen. Cause I do have a lot of customers that, we'll get wrapped up on the day-to-day. You know, why is the soybean market trading lower? It hasn't rained in Brazil and, you know, stuff like that, when the reality is it's something totally unrelated to weather. You know, maybe we've been focused on weather the last 3 or 4 days, but today we had really crappy inspection numbers or something. And it's just one of those things where it's like, if you aren't going to do anything, if you don't have to do anything in the next few days, walk away. And so I I think anyone that trades cattle will tell you that, you know, especially if they run a feed yard or something like that, like an empty feed lot is a position.
Right. Well, yeah.
You're not buying. No, you're not selling. You're just sitting there, you know, with no position in place, and no position is a position.
So, you know, this year, obviously, we talked about yesterday about the cost and everything. Now, of course, this year with oil at this level is where they are right now, it's going to be a little bit more expensive to operate as well, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's been a conversation that we've had. The price of diesel has gone up, you know, substantially from where it was. And so has the price of other goods. Because it's been, it costs more to get things places and do things. And that's been an unintended consequence of that log. You know, there was a new electronic log mandate when it comes to truckers. And that's also been what we've seen, you know, part of the reason that we've seen some talk about grocery prices going higher and stuff like that is, you know, not only is it more expensive to get things places because oil is trading a bit higher, but it's also more expensive to get things places because you may need two drivers, you know, in the place of one before, or it takes longer to get there or something of that nature.
So now when I talk to farmers and they're putting together a marketing plan, I say, you know what, take whatever you think your costs are going to be and add 10% to that number, because there's going to mm-hmm. be something. There's going to be a breakdown. The tractors are, something's going to happen that's going to cost you money.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, we lump that into the miscellaneous expenses category.
Well, right, so right. There was a lot of
there's a phrase that I can't use, you know, that because it's inappropriate, and this is a G show. But one of the things is tires. If it has tires, it's going to cost you money. You know what I mean? So farmers are always prepared for a little bit of an extra expense, or they should be. Sometimes it definitely, there's certain certain farmers that I work with that it just sends them off the rails. You know what I mean? To have something come in and be unexpected to them. But the reality is you always have to be prepared for the unexpected.
Now, we haven't talked about the meats at all, but we got about 5 minutes left, and I want to kind of cover a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know you don't trade them as well, but they do directly sometimes are affected. And I'm wondering why feeders fell apart. I mean, they've rallied recently, but why they fell apart with the low cost of corn. I mean, that would make sense that they should be a little bit higher, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think in a lot of cases they fell apart because we had, and I mean the initial reaction in feeders to the bearish cattle on feed reports was always, you know, bullish in a certain respect, and then suddenly you saw the cash trade kind of fall apart, and I think that was, you know, kind of two reasons. I think the first one being the idea is that there's a lot of cattle out there, a lot of feeders available into the market structure that had traders thinking that, you know, they didn't have to pay up for them. Why am I paying up for them? There's tons available out there. And then the second thing was all you had to do was look at the weather. You know what I mean? So the collapse in the feeders there, you know, really kind of happened as we were getting in, you know, just ahead of the really poor, you know, you saw the low put in place just ahead of Christmas. Well, first off, you know, just ahead of Christmas there, and I'm looking at March feeders, of course, you know, which is now where the bulk of the trade lies. And, you know, you saw that low put in place there just ahead of Christmas. Well, ahead of the holiday season makes perfect sense, because who wants to handle delivery on feeders or cattle or anything like that, you know, when it's the holiday season, not to mention the fact that, you know, right around Christmas times when we saw that the weather just really take that nasty turn, you know, and become exceptionally cold and frigid and tons of snow and stuff like that. And, you know, with cattle, it's the same thing as what you see in the grain market when the basis starts to firm. You know, if the weather's poor, you know, it's hard to load cattle. It's hard to get them to do anything. And so there are people that will just basically step out of the market for a matter of time just because they don't want to be out, you know, loading or unloading cattle or, you know, introducing them to a new feedlot or something like that, you know, when it's minus 15 with a wind chill of minus 50. So I think that had a lot to do with it. The weather is supposed to moderate here going forward, and the weather has been nice here the last week or so, and you're starting to see, you know, I just saw some OKC numbers on physical feeder trade, and you're definitely starting to see that thing rebound, which we're seeing in futures right now as well. And so I think you see that carry on, because right now cattle on feed expectations are actually expected to be much lower than where they've been placement and marketing wise here this week. And, you know, with the report out on Friday. And I think that's reality. You know, I think we've stopped seeing, you know, the move of cattle and placements, you know, that we saw ahead of winter and, you know, after we had the fires, you know, that people had to pull their animals off from pasture and move them into lots because, you know, perhaps their pastures had burned and, you know, and things of that nature, flooding. I mean, weather in 2017 was very difficult. And I think that played an important role in what you saw happen in your physical feeder trade.
Yeah, no, I can certainly understand that. So now we haven't talked politics for the whole time. So let's just get, what is your take on the tax plan and what's your take on what's going on in the world? Is it good, bad, or indifferent? What's your thoughts?
To me, I think it's mostly indifferent. I really struggle with partisan politics anyway. You know, and we really saw that with the announcement of the compromise, if you can call it that, on what was it, the Schumer shutdown?
The Schumer shutdown.
And so I just struggle so much with it simply because, you know, for one, my brother-in-law is in the National Guard. So, you know, he was basically not looking at income and it just really upsets their life, you know, which it was so short lived. I mean, I don't even think they noticed other than hand wringing at this point. But, you know, so you want it, their job, you know, the number one job of Congress is to make sure to figure out a way to keep the government open. You know, it's kind of their gig, you know what I mean? So we saw that, you know, and that's frustrating because it's just everything. So it's just so heavily partisan anymore, you know, and the one thing for me with the tax bill that's left a bitter taste in my mouth, and I mentioned it prior, is the 199A provision. So they kind of stuck a provision in. Everyone says it was unintended, but it helps give cooperatives a different set, you know, type of elevator that's quote unquote farmer owned, a leg up on their competition. The big groups out there, ADM, Cargill, you know, stuff like that, they are going to, you know, they're going to receive a corporate tax break.
All right, we got to end it. Like we got to end it with that. Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains,
so
vice president of grains at Sizzle Over. Thank you so much. It's great to have you on.
I appreciate it. I always enjoy it.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Orts. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. See you all.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.